Welcome to Success Authority's Conversation Street with Leadership Authority Peter Beaumont and with Business Culture Authority Ron Lehman and me, Linda Ruland, Success Authority's founder.
This is where I think the compensation system really affects teamwork too, because they're not getting rewarded for collectively how's the company doing. It's kind of like 80% of my bonus is based upon what my individual, you know, my what we produce, what my guys produce, or what I produce.
Well, back to what you were saying about the peers competing with one another, isn't so much of that, at least in my experience, dealing with if I need more money in my budget, it's got to come from somebody else.
Yeah, it's a zero-sum game a lot of times, Linda. You're exactly right. Yeah.
So I think internal competition, we all know, is good, but it can eat away at the organization negatively. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a difference between competing against each other and competing with each other. Because I think, you know, you want a little bit of that, you know, compete in there, but not necessarily for, again, I'm totally stealing this, by the way, just so you know, Gordy, success versus effective. I just think that's such a great way to look at, and I, as you were saying that, I had a whole bunch of people in my head that I went, you know, that person was really successful and not very effective. And we've all encountered those people who, you know, they all say, yeah, that guy was a total jerk, but he hit the numbers.
Yep.
And, you know, it's the, we're never working with that guy again unless we need him and we can get him relatively cheaply. But otherwise, no way. You know, and it's just this sort of, you know, again, back to Peter's short term. You want to get somebody in there who can, you know, make a difference right away and get some, you know, success, but it doesn't build the organization or build the team or last long. It's just kind of, let's get some numbers for fourth quarter.
Right.
Gordon, you said some things about early on about the fact that organizations set people up, leaders up for failure. You've lit upon a couple of things. Did we capture most of where you were going with that, or is there more to that story?
Well, there's probably a little bit more to it, Linda, but those are the big pieces. You know, like I said, every organization wants teamwork, yet we're structured. You know, matrix organizations kill teamwork.
Yeah,
they do. So, and every organization I know has got a matrix structure. You know, reward systems oftentimes kills teamwork. We don't train leaders how to build teams. We don't reward people for building teams. So to me, there's, you know, organizations want collaboration and teamwork. And like I said, their policies inadvertently do everything they can to make sure it doesn't happen. So a lot of times I'll look at leaders and, you know, it's easy to blame the leader for a team not performing well. But then when you take a step back, you got to say, okay, is it the seed or is it the soil causing the problem here? Because it could well be the organizational soil is so antithetical to teamwork that it just makes getting people working effectively together difficult.
But certainly always been the case in sales. I mean, for me, that's the strongest example of it's everyone for themselves. And, you know, they traditionally, you know, there's all the awards and all the stuff that salespeople get for individual accomplishment. Yeah. And we all know that nobody sells anything by themselves.
Yeah. So here's one of the problems I have with Lencioni. So getting back to Lencioni doesn't make the distinction between groups and teams. And to me, there's a huge, huge distinction between the two. If you think about a gymnastics team or a golf team, a swimming team, a track team, those are essentially groups. And what I mean by that is everybody in those teams basically compete at individual events. All right. What one person does has no bearing on anybody else unless they happen to be doing a relay. But if they're running an individual event or golf, you know, what they do on the golf course has no bearing on anybody else. And they medal based upon individual performance. How did I do in my 100-yard dash? Or how did I do in my 200-yard individually medley? if there's a team award, it has to do with just a roll-up of individual results. That's a group, all right? That's a group. Sales teams are groups, all right? And one of the big mistakes I see organizations make is they try to take these groups and treat them like teams. So let's get all these salespeople singing kumbaya at the end of the day and really understand what makes each other tick. And if I'm a salesperson, I'm saying, Jesus Christ, you're stopping me from going and making money. I just want to make money, all right? I don't want to do this team building shit. Let's just get out of here. And that's really different than like a hockey team or a soccer team or a basketball team. Those are teams. They have a collective goal. What one person does on the ice or on the pitch affects everybody else, and they win or lose together. There's no individual any individual rewards. One of the big things that teams have got to grapple with, and I see this particularly with teams at the top, most teams are hybrids. What I mean by that is they have elements of group and elements of team to them. And one of the big, you know, so I've worked with about 600 top teams now, and probably the number one issue working with those teams is helping them understand when do they work as a team and when do they work as a group. On these topics, we have to be aligned. We have to be singing from the same sheet of music, and we have to drive for common results. On these topics, this is a Linda issue. This is a Ron issue. This is a Peter issue. We all don't need to get involved with it. Too many of the top teams suffer from what I call alpha paralysis. You know, everybody at the top's an alpha male or an alpha female. So I don't care how unrelated your expertise is to whatever the topic at hand is. By God, the rest of the team's got to hear my opinion. And I'll just see top teams waste an inordinate amount of time on topics that affect maybe a third of the team. So that notion between groups and teams can be really, really helpful for collections of people in really helping them understand here's the topics where we need to work together and be aligned. On this stuff, actually working together gets in the way. And it's not a fear of missing out if we're not involved. It really is helping the overall collective be more efficient if we don't talk about a bunch of this stuff and let you handle this on your own.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at the granular level, I'm sure we've all experienced, but I've seen teams, which are probably groups. But there's sort of an almost toxic inclusion where we need to get everyone's opinion on everything. And which is fine, but the missing piece is, and then how are we going to decide?
Exactly.
And we've all sat in meetings where everybody talks and they do a lot of things, and we leave the meeting and nothing's been decided, nothing's been accomplished, except to say we should meet again on this. And, you know, it's just, and that's, I think, when people talk about the waste of meetings, well, that's what it is. It's so often. And, you know, at the other end of the scale, it's one person does all the talking and everybody else nods, and it's bobblehead meetings. And then everybody goes out and has a meeting outside the meeting. So as always, it's sort of in the middle there. How do we get people to speak up and have opinions and share without the expectation that that is going to be the final decision?
Yeah, well, this is where for a lot of large organizations, I see this is this notion about fear of missing out. If I'm not in the meeting, by God, they're going to talk about something that's going to involve me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part of what we do in terms of making the implicit explicit is really outline, here are the topics where, you know, we got to have all hands on deck. Here are the topics where, guess what? We don't need to have all hands on deck. And here's who's going to be involved and here's who's going to make the calls. Mm-hmm. And so when these topics come up, I'm not, you know, wondering why I'm not involved in that meeting and, you know, doing back and forth with these other people about what are they doing and what's going on. And you just squelch that.
Yeah. Years ago, I had an experience with 3M, and they would have these meetings that were like gigantic. I mean, they'd have 30 people in the meeting, and maybe four would be germane and talk about it, and everybody else would just sit there. And I asked a couple people, well, why did you come to this? And they're all really busy. Oh, I have back-to-back meetings all day. And I said, why did you be there? And it was just that, because if I'm not here, either I'm not being heard, or worse, I'm getting assigned to all kinds of stuff because I'm not there. I think we joke about that all the time. Whoever's last to the meeting gets assigned to everything. Yeah. But I think that's, and then again, you know, that was the culture at 3M, is everybody goes to every meeting.
It was the same at, I sat in the McDonald's global office for a year when I worked with an agency, and it was exactly the same. But he missed the third one, I think, Ron, which is knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Everybody feels they have to know everything about everything.
Yeah. And also, I need to know what the boss thinks and what the hot button is.
Yeah.
So that I can shape whatever I'm doing to fit that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That's
point.
I think another thing that comes up in those things. But and do you, this is a little bit slightly off topic, but when you do assessments,
surprise,
do you assess for cultural fit?
Sure. Yeah.
And and I guess the way that works is that the organization needs to understand their culture so they can see if someone fits it. Because I come across a lot where they really don't know what they have the one they think they want or they think they have, and they test for cultural fit, but it's not really based on this is really our intentional culture.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I will say that we tend to do a much better job if we can work with clients over time, because we'll have a much better handle on what, you know, the espoused culture versus the operating culture really are.
Yeah.
So, you know, early on with the assessments, all we can do is go with here's what they say it is. And then, you know, as we do more and more of these assessments and work with the clients more, we get a much better feel for, okay, here's how things really work. Mm-hmm.
I read a case study about Zappos, the online shoe company, and they had this little anecdote in there where when they were getting ready to hire somebody, they would fly them to, I think they're in Oregon is where their headquarters are, but they'd
Vegas.
Fly them
Vegas.
In Vegas.
Vegas, I think, yeah.
The Oregon of Nevada. but they'd bring the person in, put them up in a nice hotel, and a driver would pick them up and then pick them up from the hotel and bring them to the office. And one of the things that they always did was talk to the driver and say, what kind of person was this? And that had a lot of effect on whether they continued on in the hiring process. Because if the person said, yeah, they were kind of a jerk, and because the drivers knew everybody, and they were kind of doing a cultural assessment in their own way. I thought that was really an interesting thing, is if you treated the driver poorly, you didn't get hired.
And nor should you. So yeah, I thought it was really smart. Yeah. Really smart.
I hope they're still doing well in business, because, you know, I always hate to bring up these brilliant examples and then the company went bankrupt.
It's like I read something similar to this. It was Nora Ephron, I think, was a famous writer out of New York, and she got fired from Uber because of all the driver complaints against her. You know, she would just be dictating which direction to go and yelling at the drivers and stuff. And there was finally just enough complaints. It was like, you know, there's your personality inventory right there.
Yeah.
I don't need a test.
Well, it goes back to some of those successful people. They're really good at the performance of leadership and performing as a leader, like an actor.
Yeah.
But then you find out in other engagements. I worked with a guy once who was absolutely Eddie Haskell when it came to anybody above him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just obsequious. It was unbelievable. But everybody below him was a jerk, and what can you do for me? And it was really evident. And that was the most startling example I've ever seen of that he just considered anybody that couldn't help him, anybody who could help him move forward, he used them. Anybody above him, he just brown-nosed. Like, I've never seen anything like it.
Sounds like a successful leader, Ron.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't, not so much by his resume. He would be successful. He had one of those, does about a year everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Yeah, most of these folks do. They do a year or two somewhere, and then they go somewhere else, and it's a bigger job.
Stones.
Yeah. He was effective at getting hired. He was really good at interviewing and getting hired. But once in whatever job it was, he never stuck anywhere.
Yeah, well, that's why there's a big distinction, I think, between, you know, having a title versus how you actually did in the job. You know, I'd see these people over and over again, particularly in HR. where sometimes they weren't particularly effective consultants. As a matter of fact, some of them were dumber than boxes and rocks. But for some reason, they got hired into an HR organization and oftentimes become a CHRO. And now they get their, you know, and then they end up lasting a year or two before they get fired. But now they had CHRO on their title. And now they're, you know, a resident guru. I've just seen this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
These folks were not that good, but they were very loyal and very successful and got promoted. And then, man, yeah.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Conversation Street. For more information or to schedule a private conversation with Success Authorities, email us at inquire@successauthorities.com.